Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.
Welcome to the Salt and Light Podcast. Be salt and light, glorifying the Lord by your life.
Hey everybody, welcome to today's edition of the Salt and Light Podcast. I am your host, Chuck Fulkerson, joined by the remunerative Annie Fulkerson.
I don't know.
Come on.
I'm not even going to try this week. I just can't.
Remunerative.
I just can't.
Means this is meditating and pondering. I don't know why I thought of that one. I just kind of did. It was kind of
usually
a cool
pick
one.
Something to describe me. Is that how I am today?
No, not really. I just thought it was a cool word.
Say it again.
Remunerative.
Remunerative.
Yeah.
You should have picked like defeat, something that was a synonym for defeatist, because I wasn't even going to try this week. Oh. I just didn't even have it in me.
Oh. Defeatist. That's a little rough.
I just spent 4 hours creating an orchestra board to teach my homeschoolers.
First of all, your orchestra board.
My brain is fried.
You did. You spent 4 hours. Like, I came home from work and you were on the ground working on that orchestra board and you just finished. And it is a thing of beauty.
It's thanks.
Awesome. I mean, you have like multiple layers of orchestra. You laminate. She, I understand this, people. She cut out individual, what are they called? Instruments, and then laminated each one. So then you can put them where they go in the little orchestra.
Well, I'm teaching them two different phases of orchestra, the romantic period and then the modern period. So they need to know the difference between the two orchestra formats.
The only orchestra I need to know is about the sad trombone. Wah, wah, wah.
You know, Taylor Schroll is going to get on you for not having the soundboard
hooked up to actually run that through a soundboard
instead of through your face hole.
Taylor has a studio. We have what used to be a nursery.
Yeah, but now
hashtag winning.
Yeah, transformative.
That's true.
And you did run the soundboard through the
I should have done that. You're right.
What do you call it? The app through our soundboard. You could have done it.
It worked for the Noah podcast.
It did.
I love the Noah pod. Now I'm going to have the long neck geese and the humpty back camels stuck in my head.
Yeah.
So we had a fun weekend. We took a couple of days. Well, it took a day, I guess it would be.
An overnight.
Yeah, it was an overnight.
A surprise overnight.
We went to Galveston for overnight, you know, because it's our 13th anniversary is coming up on Monday. And, you know, like for the first anniversary, you're supposed to get wood. And for the second anniversary, you're supposed to get paper. And for, you know, all the different ones, like the 50th is gold, right? Well, the 13th is running shoes. So we went and got you running shoes.
Is there like a subliminal message there? Like,
no,
here, honey, here's
no,
a you, pair of running
no,
shoes.
No, you got blisters from your other shoes.
Well, that's because they're court shoes. Because
right.
I do.
We got you. You had
plyo and lifting.
You had blisters from the other ones. So I thought it would be nice for you to get those. And then we went to see the Black Panther movie. And we stayed down at Galveston Island, which was really nice. And it was like people like, so what'd you do? And then how'd we cap it?
Well, we went to see Black Panther, but before that, we went on a tour, which was really cool.
We did the ultimate in 72-year-old weekend.
Shut up. It was awesome.
It was awesome. No question. We toured a mansion that was built in the late 1800s, the Bishop's Palace, and we'll get to in a minute. But we definitely had a 70s something weekend because we spent the day touring a palace. We went to see the church that was in Galveston because it was really old and really pretty.
We had a Blue Plate special dinner because we ate super, super early.
We had dinner at 3:30.
No, actually, it was earlier than that, I think. It was like 2 o'clock.
2 something. We had dinner super early. We went to a 5 o'clock movie, and we were in bed by 9.
That allowed me to have popcorn for dinner.
And then we got up the next morning and went to Mass. We are so old.
Hey, that sounds like a heck of a good time to me. I was young. I saw Black Panther.
I was young.
I like superheroes.
I was young. We were out until 8:30.
8:30.
if you count the glass of wine at the hotel bar.
Okay, so yes. And we went to the hotel bar and there was a guy playing guitar and singing karaoke, and you were singing the same songs
as the guys that were in their 70s.
I grew up with that music. That was some great music.
It's official. We're old.
They put on, like, he started singing, he was playing Lionel Richie.
Lionel Richie and Neil Diamond.
I was digging it.
Yep. It was awesome.
Old soul.
Oh, no question. No, there is no.
Hey, that was like a perfect overnight for me. I loved it.
It was.
You packed for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not a great idea. Hashtag epic
failure.
Yeah, I was close.
You were kind of close. Like 70% close.
That's a high number. Yeah. That's a high estimate.
Yeah. Like tan pants for church and black patent leather shoes. Every woman out there is going, oh.
What's wrong with that? You don't do tan pants and black leather. I thought your shoes looked really nice with those pants. You don't do that?
The shoes are really nice and the pants are really nice, but not together.
You can't do those together?
Not really.
Oh, why? Whoops. Hashtag epic failure.
We went to a new church.
We did. We went to a new church.
And no one knew us there. So it was okay.
I know. Like you didn't have to, you didn't teach children's liturgy. You didn't serve communion. You just got to sit.
I actually got to participate. Yeah. And just sit and observe. So we thought
we would talk about what our experience was going to a new church, and the whole new rite.
That is a good segue. So we're Catholic, and we
really
we are. Imagine that.
I'm sure people are so surprised.
They're so surprised. But we usually celebrate. We normally celebrate according to the Roman rite. So we're Roman Catholic. However, we went to Mass on Sunday at a Byzantine Catholic church. And I've been really wanting to celebrate the Byzantine liturgy for a really long time. But I know that it's quite a bit longer than a Roman Mass. And there's lots of standing and lots of singing. And I thought, you know, before we go, I figured you and I would just go. And I really wanted to just experience it because I wasn't sure how. So John is three. I wasn't sure how he would do at like a 2-hour liturgy. So I figured we would go ourselves. And so we did.
Yeah. And it was such a different experience that it helps you to appreciate that how much everybody else's, I guess the variations of experience that everybody has, but still that deep, profound joy that everybody had. I mean, and what's interesting is that after Mass, we sat down, after the liturgy, we sat down and had coffee with some of the parishioners there. Mm-hmm. And they were...
Because I sat toward the back, right?
Yes. She's like, oh, we'll sit in the back. We sat in the third row. The fourth row. Ooh.
That was further back. You could still see people in front of
you. That was the farthest back we've ever sat. Because we didn't know how to take communion. I mean, it's very different. And I was all nervous up. I'm like, you go first. but what I found really interesting, and certainly we have a lot of friends that go to our local parish, a lot of friends in the Roman Catholic Church that are very well read and very, you know, they know their stuff. Not like these guys. Mm-hmm. Like they really knew their stuff. I was so impressed with how much they knew, just about the early church fathers and the history of their church, and something that I wouldn't say that most Roman Catholics have.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. At least with our experience, you know, at the parish, going to the Divine Liturgy on Sunday. And for people who don't know, the Byzantine Catholic Church it's called a rite with a small r. So it's one of the rites of the Catholic Church. So there's, so what that means is they are in communion with Rome. And they share all of the same theological doctrines and dogmas. But the way they express the liturgy is very much expressed in their own culture and spirituality of the East. And so the Byzantine Rite, if we go back to like the apostolic church.
Real quick, before you go there, I want to say is one of the reasons that I was interested in going is, you know, when we first started, you know, part of the reason that we started doing podcasts and started was we started listening to Catholic Stuff You Should Know. Mm-hmm. For those of you guys that don't listen to Catholic Stuff You Should Know, it's a really good podcast. Those guys are amazing. And Father Michael O'Loughlin is Byzantine. Mm-hmm. And so
he's a Byzantine priest.
He's a Byzantine priest. Mm-hmm. And so
it's great. Three Roman priests and one Byzantine priest.
It's great to hear his perspectives on some of the differences. And I didn't realize exactly how profound the differences were until we got there. Mm-hmm. And so I was very interested to see what the differences were because I'd listened to Father Michael for so long and he's got, I mean, he's got amazing insights, but when you hear him on the podcast, you don't hear as many of the differences as when you experience the liturgy versus the Roman Catholic Mass.
Right. And, I thought maybe it would be helpful to do like a just tiny little bit of a history of like what it means, because I think it confuses a lot of people. So if we go back like to the apostolic age, right? When Christ began the church, now Christ ascends into heaven. Okay. And he leaves the apostles and he says, go make disciples of all nations. So the apostles spread and they are sent to the far corners of the earth. Well, there are initially sort of five churches that were that began to really blossom and grow. So we had the Church of Rome, the church in Jerusalem, Alexandria, Antioch, and Constantinople. So Constantine,
was it Istanbul or Constantinople? Was it Istanbul or Constantinople? You
know, yeah, I always get the classical conversations timeline song stuck in my head with the Constantine legalizes Christianity.
Yep.
Right. So, so Constantine, you know, legalizes Christianity, and so you have the church there. Now, the way the churches were experiencing the liturgy was different insofar as their culture influenced it. So they're all doctrinally the same because they're all started by the apostles, right?
Right.
But so some of the liturgies are more influenced by, say like St. James, right? And I think that's where the influence came from in the Byzantine church in Constantinople, right? Because it was Byzantium, right? The ancient city of Byzantium. And so St. James is establishing, you know, the liturgy and influencing it according to, you know, the customs and the spirituality of the people that are there. And right. If you think about it now, like, you can just go travel within the United States and you'll get different cultures and, the way people, you know, express themselves. And so if you think about,
what are you talking about?
That's right. you talking to me?
You're talking to me.
So you have these, you have the liturgy being celebrated, and the different ecclesiastical or churches, the ecclesiastical assemblies being celebrated in different forms. However, the thing that remained constant was the fact that the sacraments were being the very essence or nature of the sacrament was being performed, whatever, the same. And so for a sacrament to be confected or realized, it must have three components, and that is matter, form, and intention. So what that means is matter is just matter, like we would know it. Like, you need the stuff.
Right.
Okay. You need the same stuff.
You got to have the raw materials.
And so whether that be, you know, bread, coming from wheat and wine, right? So we, you know, on all of course, all of these things are biblical, right?
Because fruit of the vine, work of human hands.
Yeah, that's right. So Christ, I mean, Christ gives us these sacraments. And so in the biblically, all of these sacraments come from the very words of Christ. And so when we're talking about matter, it's the very stuff that we need to perform these sacraments. And then there's form. And so form is like the words that are said so that it's efficacious, okay. Right? So when the priest...
Hold on.
What?
Define the word efficacious.
We just did this last week. That's why I used it.
I know.
It's effective.
Okay, good.
All right. So when...
Many of your listeners, thank you.
So
every time you use a big word, Jacqueline's like, make him stop. Make her stop that.
I don't use that many big words. So when the priest uses the word, because he is ordained and he uses those very words of Christ, this is my body, this is my blood, right? And several others, but those are like the heart of it. He's using the words of Christ, and through him, the body and the blood, or the bread and the wine, are transformed, transubstantiated into the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord. So that's an example of form, is the words, the efficacious words of Christ. Okay. And then intention, the person who is doing the sacrament,
right,
must have the intention of it actually working, right? I mean, you can't be like, oh, I don't really believe this. I'll just say, you know, like,
this is not
so
accurate.
There has to be the intention. There has to be the intention there. So getting back to the rites, like all of them, all of the rites, even though maybe the churches might look different, or they're using a different language, or it's decorated differently, or whatever it happens to be, all of the sacraments are being confected or realized in the same way: matter, form, and intention. Does that make sense?
So there's
So the
important stuff is still in place.
Yeah, doctrinally.
The capital T's are in place,
are consistent.
The correct. Little T's,
that's right. And there's like over 20 different rites in the Catholic Church. And the Roman rite is one of them. The Byzantine rite is another one. There's the Melkite rite, right? So where we went to mass was in Houston, or Divine Liturgy was in Houston. And that one church shared two different rites shared that church. So it was the Ruthenian rite, they're both Byzantine, right? But they're one is called Ruthenian, which is Slavic, right?
Slavic.
And then Slavic Ruthenian. And then the other one is Melkite. And that is mostly like Arabic. So it's
Catholics. It was in Arabic and Greek.
Right. So the whole Divine Liturgy is actually said in Arabic and Greek, at least at this one parish. So the one that we went to was Slavic Ruthenian, and it was all in English. But there's many rites, and what it allows people to do is express the beauty of Christianity and their I don't want to say idea of God, but I don't know, maybe there's a better way to say that, but they're like how they perceive God, and they're able to express that outwardly,
right,
with things. So like in and also some prayers as well. And so when we went to this St. John Chrysostom in Houston, there's the icons. I think I'm mostly drawn to
they're beautiful.
The icons. Oh, it was so beautiful.
And the thing I was drawn to that I found amazing was the veil.
Yeah.
So there's a veil which is up before Mass begins, before the liturgy begins, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And then it comes down. And then when it's done, it goes back up. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, I never saw it go up or down.
Yeah, all right.
I just noticed it was there and not there.
Actually, now that you say that, I didn't either.
I never noticed it going up and down. I don't know how it goes up and down. I just noticed it was there and not there.
Yeah. So there, and forgive my ignorance, I just don't know the name of it, but there's like a wall.
Well, I always think of, because I've heard you use this, if I've heard you use it once, I've heard you use it a thousand times, the veil between heaven and earth is thin. Mm-hmm. And it made me think of that line that you say when I saw the veil hanging in front of the altar, hanging in front of the altar. So, you know, it's like when Christ is present, the veil is gone.
Mm-hmm. And I'll post a picture maybe of, that's what I'll do for this podcast. The image will be of St. John Chrysostom on the inside so that people can see. And there's probably listeners like, this is what it's called. I just don't know, but there's like a wall, in front of the altar, kind of separating the congregation from the priest and the deacon, if there's a deacon there, and the altar. And there's a few openings. So there's one opening in this wall where that's what Chuck was saying. Like, there's this veil, there's like a curtain that covers this one opening. And then there's an opening on either side. And this wall is spectacularly decorated with the images of the Theotokos, the Mother of God, of Christ, of course. Usually the four evangelists, different saints, maybe the patron saint of that particular church, things of that nature. And they are so incredibly beautiful. And so the veil he's talking about is of the main opening, in that.
The wall, by the way, is called an iconostasis.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Did you just look that up? Awesome.
No, I knew it.
You just knew it.
I just knew it.
Oh, thanks for looking that up. So
Saint Google helped a lot. Saint Google brought divine inspiration.
Awesome. So what was it called again? Say the name again.
Iconostasis. Yeah.
Stasis. Whatever.
Iconostasis is a wall of icons and religious paintings separating the nave from the sanctuary in a church.
Perfect. So that's what it's called. And there's these openings. And so, also the priest is celebrating the divine liturgy with his back to you. Right. So you are facing the same direction as the priest.
Right.
Now, what that does is, at least for me, I had two very, very profound opinions of, or I shouldn't say profound opinions, but like very, very strong feelings about what we experienced. And the one was, it so affected me to be standing in the same direction as the priest, because when the priest's back was to me, and he was, you know, he was at the altar, he was, you know, saying the prayers of consecration, occasionally you'd get like a glimpse of what he was doing, but that combined with the second thing that really affected me was the fact that when you are experiencing the divine liturgy, at least in the Byzantine rite, you stand pretty much the entire time and everything is sung except the homily, everything. And we were given, when I walked in, a sheet of paper with like 30 different lists of things on it, prayers and the page numbers for everything. And about like 30 minutes into the liturgy, I figured out, I think both of us kind of figured out how the flow went. And there is so much participation by the congregation. It is this beautiful dialogue between the priest and the congregation that just goes back and forth and it flows. And that combined with the priest's back to you just felt like, it felt like the congregation was so necessary in that celebration. Like, you can't have it without the congregation being there, right? Because we were so involved in what we were saying, and then the priest would sing, and then the deacon would sing, and then we would sing again. And it just was this like back and forth, just dance of rich theological prayer that was so incredibly beautiful. I loved those two aspects. And furthermore, the prayers that we were saying, the responses and the calls and the responses, the play between the priest and the deacon and the congregation was so theologically rich. It really took me aback to hear the things that, like, you know, I've spent the last 15 years studying, right?
Right.
And now just embedded and so ingrained in the divine liturgy are all of the things that, like, if you just go to mass and just half pay attention, you get so much, you know, rich theology that allows you to really connect with what's happening and connect with the divine presence.
I did find it because I, you know, I certainly am not as well read as you, but I, you know, I don't feel like I'm a total knave, but I did notice that there was nothing on the Old Testament. Like in the Roman Church, we always have the Old Testament reading, the New Testament reading. Mm-hmm. There wasn't anything in the Old Testament. Now, I'm not sure if maybe that was just the day that we went. I don't know.
I didn't look into that. I don't know how the in the Roman Rite, we have the lectionary that's organized in a 3-year cycle for Sundays, and then a 2-year cycle for the weekday masses, which I've said ad nauseum on this podcast.
Right.
But I'm not sure how the liturgy, if you might want to ask St. Google there. I don't know how the Byzantine liturgy, you know, lectionary, if you will, is organized. I don't know. And I don't know. They also don't, it could have been just because we were in the season of Lent as well.
That would make sense.
An educated guess, because they were, and sometimes I know that when we went for coffee afterwards, with, you know, into the family center or whatever with, you know, with the other parishioners, they had said that a lot of times their readings and gospels revolve around, the feast day of the particular saint on saint, you know, saint's day that right. you're celebrating on. Did you find anything when you just looked that up?
No,
we should have probably prepared better for this podcast.
Hashtag epic failure.
Yeah. Whoops. So I'm not sure about that.
And we went on cheese fair Sunday.
We did. Cause the next day, yeah, they do have a very, very strict, although one of the guys was saying that the law has been,
no,
lesson
compared to the Roman Rite, they have a very strict fasting.
They do,
compared
but it's been
to what's done in the actual East.
Yeah,
their U.S. version of fasting is not as strict.
Yeah,
in their church as well.
Yeah, yeah. It compared to Roman, it's
and I hear about that
strict.
when we listen to the Catholic Stuff You Should Know podcast.
Right.
Father Michael talks about that a lot.
He does.
Because Father Nathan makes fun of him.
Yeah. Because they give up meat, and then they give up dairy, and then they give up eggs.
Oh.
And so, but what's beautiful is that
I gave up everything with four legs and a mother. I can't eat anything with four legs and a mother, and it's killing me.
But when one of the, our new friends, Dave, he was telling us that on Easter, they bring their Easter baskets for the Easter basket blessing.
Yeah, it's
and
awesome.
In it has all of the things that they gave up for Lent. So it's full of cheese and eggs and their meat that they, you know, that they're going to cook
I would actually make a basket out of bacon. I could weave bacon together to make an Easter basket out of bacon.
That's been done. You can do it.
Oh, I know.
You, because I've made that in little like the muff, like you flip
weaved,
the muffin tins over and you
bacon
can make
into muffin tins.
That's right.
That actually wasn't.
It was really messy.
Yeah, that was so hard to clean.
It was so messy. It was a good experiment once.
Yeah, that's something you do
unless
once.
We just throw away the muffin tin afterwards because I never want to clean that again.
That actually we could do. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Did you have any other thoughts on it?
No, you know, I would encourage everybody to go. I really would. I think everybody who's Roman Catholic should at least go. I mean, they're in communion with Rome, so you know, you get communion. It's
that was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
How to receive communion.
Yeah, because the you know, and it's leavened bread, and the bread is soaked in the blood.
Yes.
The body is soaked in the blood, so you get both species. And he uses a spoon, but he doesn't touch your face with the spoon. So it's actually probably, you know, it's something that most people, when they first look at it, go, huh? But it made perfect sense. And the cutest thing in the world, there was a 1-year-old baby receiving communion. Because in the Byzantine church, you can receive communion so long as you don't spit it out.
Yeah, as long as you can eat.
Yeah.
You can receive. Because I think they get baptism and confirmation like at the same time as babies. So you can receive the Eucharist as early as you can eat. And so it literally moved me to tears to... You walk up in two lines and only the priest is giving communion on this spoon. And so what you do is there's a table with an icon of Christ, and you pass that first and you can venerate the icon. And then you go up one at a time and tilt your head way back and open your mouth, and the priest takes a spoonful of the precious body and blood and just kind of tips it into your mouth.
Nobody can see your hand.
And I always use my hands. We know this. But it tips it into your mouth, and your mouth doesn't touch the spoon. And he just feeds everybody, you know, which is such a powerful image that you have the priest who is, you know, our shepherd,
right,
in persona Christi, the ultimate shepherd, you know, administering, you know, having just transubstantiated through the power of Christ the Eucharist, and is now, you know, giving it to the faithful. It's an incredibly powerful image.
It was weird not to kneel during consecration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody stands, but we're so involved in the prayers, you know, and you say I would encourage people to look up the prayers that the priest says and the congregation says during that time. It's absolutely beautiful. And like I said, so theologically rich. But as we were walking up, I happened to be next to the woman holding her, who was lectors, right? One of the readers. And she was holding this little, her 1-year-old baby. And the baby just wanted to, you know, lean over and kiss the picture of Christ. And then she was holding him, and she walked up and she received communion. And then the little baby tipped his head back and he, you know, received Christ. And it was just absolutely beautiful. It literally moved me to tears to see that.
So, well, yeah. I would recommend, you know, we live in the Houston area, and anybody who lives in Houston, it's in the northwest part of Houston, just north of 610, for those that know the area. If you don't live in the Houston area, I'm certain that there is a parish in your local area. You should go. I think it's amazing for everybody to get the chance to see what the differences are. And what it does is, I think, and I know that I've been guilty of this, and I think a lot of people have, especially when you go to Mass all the time, every week, and you know exactly what's coming and what the next step is. It's easy sometimes to, I don't want to say
autopilot.
Yeah, that's a good word, to autopilot Mass. And I think it does a good job of it's the anti-autopilot, because it's completely different. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really good. I think that's good for people to kind of get an experience and feel. And so, yeah, I think everybody should do it.
Yeah. And there are over 20 different rites. So it's not like I felt particularly called, well, we did, you know, you because of Father Michael and, and to a large extent, you know, me as well. And I'm also very drawn to the icons. And so I really wanted, plus my very, very dear friend grew up Slavic Ruthenian as well. Right. So I wanted to experience the liturgy that way as well. But there's over 20 different rites. Like, there's another parish that I really would love to go to in Houston. It's called Our Lady of Walsingham. And that is an Anglican rite. So there are over 44 different parishes that used to be Anglican that the whole parish converted to Catholicism, the right. whole thing. And, but they've been doctrinally corrected, but they've been able to retain their customs, right? And how they like to celebrate the Mass, you know, in terms of the spirituality and culture and things like that. So there's that, there's the Byzantine, there's the Melkite, well, it's just sort of Byzantine anyway. Right. What else?
I'm out on this one. I got nothing
there. Well, there's Alexandrian rites,
Coptic.
Yes. Yep. Yep. So there's lots of different rites that, you know, that you can attend as, you know, as a Catholic and still experience the liturgy in, and not be still experience the liturgy in a,
Now, but these are different, and this is something that a lot of people might get confused over. These are different than the Orthodox.
Oh yes,
churches.
These are not
right.
Yeah, these are not Eastern Orthodox.
Eastern Orthodox. This is not Roman or Russian Orthodox or Greek Orthodox.
It's no, these are different. Not Eastern Orthodox.
That was the East-West schism of the church.
Right. So these rites with a small r, you'll oftentimes see it as rites. They are in communion with Rome. They've just retained their spiritual and cultural traditions, but they are doctrinally, you know, linked to, you know, to the papacy. So, they have their own like hierarchy and stuff like that. Sometimes, you know, they won't be like their hierarchy won't be called bishops. They'll be called right. patriarchs. And, they right. may like not the be called.
The church we went to is not part of the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston.
No, they're part of, it's not a diocese. It's called an eparchy. So they're part of the eparchy of Phoenix. And so they have some different names. But they are all, like I said, in communion with Rome. So they are all Catholic. It's different than Eastern Orthodox. So yeah, so you would want to look for different Catholic rites if you were going to experience a different liturgy, which I agree. Everyone should definitely check it out and okay. go experience the liturgy that way.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we actually have, I have good news for everybody. We got a text message from our dear friend Carol, and it was many different podcast topics specifically so that I didn't sing.
That's right. That's she texted us as soon awesome. As she listened.
Literally,
to...
she heard the podcast and 3 minutes later, she sent a list of topics that said, please, Chuck, don't sing. Here's the list. Thanks, Carol. I love you too.
We love Carol.
So, all right. Well, if you guys have any other podcast topics, please visit us at saltandlightonline.com. Send us your podcast topics, things you'd like to hear. If you've not done a review on iTunes, do us a favor. Go do a review on iTunes. If you like us, give us 5 stars. If you don't like us, give us 5 stars anyway, and then tell us somewhere else that you don't like us. But seriously, it helps a ton when you give reviews on the podcast. It helps people to see us. And really, you know, we do this so that we can spread the message and spread the word. So.
That's right. St. Anthony the Abbot.
Pray for us.
Peace be with you.
You've been listening to the Salt and Light Podcast. Be salt and light, glorifying the Lord by your life.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.